today's mitzvah, we're up to mitzvah number 451. 451. And 451 is the mitzvah of shechita, of kosher slaughter. And the Torah says, when it comes to shechita, this is the quote is from the book of Devarim, chapter 12. It says, Ki yirchak, it talks about, before this part of the Torah, it talks about bringing karbanos, bringing sacrifices. And then it says, Hashem will expand your borders as he promised to you, and you'll have a desire to eat meat. The Torah says that when you are far from the Beis HaMikdash, and you can't offer sacrifices all the time to eat the meat, therefore, you can slaughter your own cattle and your own flocks that Hashem has given to you, as I have commanded you. And you can eat them in your own private gates, in your own homes, as you desire. Then the Torah goes ahead and it explains there's a prohibition of eating the blood and certain fats. But this is the idea of a kosher slaughter. You shall slaughter your cattle and your sheep, and that then allows you to eat the meat. That's how the Torah describes it. The idea of kosher slaughter applies to what we call chaya, which is wild animals, behema, domesticated animals, and oaf, and birds, fowl, poultry. It does not apply to fish or to kosher grasshoppers. The other only insect kosher is grasshoppers are kosher. You don't have to slaughter a grasshopper. You can eat it, as is. And the Torah says here, interesting line, it says, Kasher tzivisicha, as I have commanded you. So God tells Moshe, you shall eat the meat, slaughter it as I've commanded you. So on this, Rashi tells us, and the Gemara tells us, this is actually one of the places the Torah actually alludes to the oral tradition. Many of the halachas that we have, many laws that we have in the Torah, are only explained through the oral tradition, the Torah Shebal Peh, and they're not explicit anywhere in the Torah itself. So here, Hashem is alluding to it, because he tells Moshe, you have to slaughter the animal, as I have told you. Where did he tell him? Nowhere in the Torah is explained how to slaughter. The answer is, it's an oral tradition. So Hashem explains to Moshe, this is how to slaughter an animal, and that's what makes it kosher. So that's kasher tzivisicha. And it's interesting, because some things we know in life need to have some sort of oral explanation. You have to see a model. I think we spoke about this a few weeks ago. But certain things require a model. If I gave you a book on surgery, you can know backwards and forwards, but you're not touching me until you've actually seen a surgery in action. You have to have some experience with it. There's a reason why certain jobs require an apprenticeship. You have to be able to go and actually experience the procedure before you do it yourself. So it makes a lot of sense that shechita should be something which is in the oral law, because you have to have a teacher for shechita. And that's how it works nowadays. You have to be trained by somebody and get approved. You can't just go ahead, take the knife, and start killing animals. You have to really know what you're doing by watching an experienced shochet. So that's the idea of shechita. Now just to go through some of the basics of shechita, I'm not a shochet myself, never slaughtered an animal, but just to talk about some basic halachas, and then we'll discuss the meaning of it. Shechita essentially means you take a knife and you cut through the trachea and the esophagus of the animal. Straight through the neck, the trachea and the esophagus. For animals, you have to get through most of both of those organs. For a bird, if you get through most of one of them, it would be kosher. It's not ideally you should slaughter it fully, but it would be kosher when you get through one of them. There's four or five basic things that disqualify a shechita. Besides the person who's slaughtering it being unknowledgeable. But if you do a shechita, there's something called shehiya, which is delay. It has to be a clear, constant cut. There's no hesitation within the cut. There's something called drasa, which is if you were to push, instead of the knife supposed to be slicing back and forth, if you were just to force it through with pressure, that's a problem. There's something called chalada, which means if the knife gets caught under one of these organs, and it kind of, instead of just going straight through, gets caught and twisted in there, that's a problem. And something called hagram, which is if the knife slants off in the wrong direction, it has to be straight through in the right area of the neck. If it slants off in the wrong direction, that also disqualifies it. Additionally, it has to be a cut. You can't tear. It has to cut. So that's the idea of shechita. It has to cut through. It has to be a smooth knife. It can't have any nicks. A shochet is constantly checking his knife. There's halachas of how often you have to check the knife for any nicks, but a shochet will run it over his fingernail or his finger sometimes to check if the knife is smooth, doesn't have any nicks, because a nick could disqualify a shechita. You need an experienced person, obviously, to do a shechita. If you're inexperienced, then stay away. And it's important that people, when kosher organizations, one of the main things they have to know is who is the shochet of this meat. Is the person knowledgeable? Is the person Torah observant? Does the person know what they're doing? Is the person God-fearing? If the person's not God-fearing, so they can know all the rules, But if they make a slight mistake, they're not going to confess to the mistake because it's going to cause a big monetary loss. They can lose their job. See, to someone who's God-fearing, that will tell you, if I made a mistake in my shechita, you'll know about it. You have to trust the person. Because some of these things can be very, very slight errors, but could make render the animal treif. You wouldn't want that to happen. So that's the basics of kosher shechita. That's what it takes. Shechita is a mitzvah, as we're describing. There's a bracha made on shechita. So before a shilka begins shechting, he'll make a bracha. And that's the idea of shechita. Now, I think to understand more about shechita, I want to discuss the concept of eating meat in general, according to the Torah. And once we understand how the Torah views eating meat, we can also understand more about shechita itself. So this is actually a much larger discussion, because the idea of eating meat in the Torah dates all the way back to the very first chapter of Bereishis. In the beginning of Bereishis, Perek Aleph, the first perek in the entire Torah, first chapter in the Torah. So Hashem is speaking to the first human beings, to Adam and Chava, and he's telling them what's theirs, what can they eat. And then he tells them, Mekolet Zagan, that's actually in the second perek. But in the first perek, he says, Birmokim, Hinei Nasati Lechem Meskol Esav Zerea Zera, I'm giving over to you vegetation upon the land, and trees that have fruits. That will be for eating. Nor does Hashem permit them to eat meat. And Rashi points out that Adam and Chava are not allowed to eat meat. It's very interesting. The way that Rashi explains it, though, there's actually an interesting nuance in Rashi. Rashi, in his explanation, says, Lohir shel Adam lishta lahamis birya lechol basar. They weren't allowed to kill any creature and eat its meat. So if you read the Rashi carefully, Rashi could be telling us that they were allowed to eat meat if the animal had died on its own or naturally, but they couldn't kill an animal to eat meat. So some commentators understand Rashi that way. The Rashi is teaching us that Adam and Chava were allowed to eat meat only if the animal naturally died, but not if the animal was, but they couldn't kill the animal. That's one approach. Other approaches are, no, he doesn't mean that, and really all meat was forbidden originally for the first people. And there's an approach to say that because the issue essentially was killing the animal, if we let you eat meat that die naturally, people would starve their animals, mistreat them, so they would die naturally. So therefore, there's a prohibition made overall. Don't eat any meat because we can't trust you. If we let you eat meat if natural animals naturally died, perhaps you would then mistreat the animal so it would naturally die.
Help it out.
Right, yeah, help it naturally die. Exactly, right. So we don't want that to happen. So that's the Maharal's explanation. But essentially, the typical approach is that Adam and Chava were not allowed to eat any meat. And so why is this? Why was meat originally forbidden in the world? So Ramban, Nachmanides, tells us an interesting point. He says that all animal life has a high status. Animals know they're alive. Animals have intelligence. They have ambitions. And we call this the nefesh chaya. Animals do have a form of a soul. It's not the level of a human soul. It's a lower level of a soul. It's called a nefesh. They don't have a neshama. They have what's called a nefesh. It's a life force within them. It animates them. It gives them their instincts and their intelligence and their ambitions. Animals can do a lot of amazing things. Animals have a lot of abilities. So where does that come from? That comes from what we call their nefesh. Hashem gave them a certain spiritual life force, which allows the animal to function and animates the animal. It's interesting. I actually just heard recently a study was done that there was once some tiger cubs that were captured. These tiger cubs had lost, I think their mother had been killed. So they were orphan tiger cubs. So scientists captured the cubs and raised them in a lab. Eventually, they got too big to stay in the lab. So they decided we're going to release them back into the wild. But they were very concerned because these tiger cubs had no training to survive in the wild. You know, they did not grow up with a mother teaching them how to hunt and how to eat and what to do. So they were concerned the tigers may not survive. But yet they said, we can't have them in the lab anymore. We're going to give it a try. So they released the tigers, and they were astounded to see that these tigers just instinctually knew how to attack, how to hunt deer, how to tear it apart, what to eat. And the tigers were able to survive in the wild without any training because animals have instincts. And these instincts, which we would say are built into the nefesh of the animal, Hashem programmed them in. And therefore, these animals were able to survive despite they didn't have any training, no education, no parents, no nothing. They're able to survive. So animals do have a special status in the Torah beyond plant life, beyond things which are inanimate, because they do have what's called a nefesh. So we respect that. And therefore, Hashem told the original human beings, in the first 10 generations of the world, we're not allowed to eat any meat because animal life has to be respected. It's not on the level of human life, but yet animal life has meaning to it. Only after the flood, in the times of Noah, was meat permitted. And that's what Torah says later on. This is in Bereishis, in chapter 9 of Bereishis. This is after they leave the Teva, the Ark. And Hashem, at that point, tells Noach, he gives them a bracha, he blesses them that they should be fruitful and multiply and fill the land. He says that your fear shall be upon all the animals will fear you, and all the fish are given to you in your hands. And then it says, Kol remes asher hu chai lachem yeh la'ochla. Hashem tells Noach that living beings are allowed to be food for you. Similar, ki yerek esef, similar to vegetation. So at that point, Hashem permits Noach and the rest of humankind afterwards to eat meat. That was in Noach's time. So what changed now? If animal life was held to be a higher status and respected beforehand, how come in Noach's time suddenly they're allowed to eat meat? And that's a big question. So some commentators just say very practically, very simply, that the world changed at that point. Nature changed, and human nature changed. And the Torah tells us at that point, before the flood, the natural world functioned differently. After the flood, the seasons changed, and human life changed, and everything changed. So at that point, the nature of the human being became weaker, and we needed more nutrition. That's how some commentators explained it. We needed the protein. You know, we needed to have that nutrition in order to survive. This is the way it's explained by the Netziv, by Hirsch. Many explain it this way. And therefore, so practically, even though animal life is regarded as a higher form than plant life, being that human beings are on the top, and we needed that nutrition to be able to be strong enough to survive, we were permitted to eat animal life. That's one explanation. Another point is that we became, after the flood, we became less dependent upon the earth. We know that the earth became cursed after Adam and Chava even. After they did the sin from the tree of knowledge, they said us, the earth became cursed. So once the earth is cursed, we can't rely upon the earth all that much anymore. And certainly after the flood, when the earth became weakened, it's hard to rely upon the earth for our full food source. Nature itself became, you know, less nutritious and less luxurious. Now, we look at the fruits and vegetables of our time, and we think these are great. But we don't know what it was like prior to the flood. Before the flood, everything was much more luscious, much more nutritious, much more, but tasted better, it was healthier. So once the flood hit and everything changed, we have to need other food sources, because nature was not going to cut it for us. So that's, therefore, Hashem permitted meat. So that's the approach of many of the commentators. But there are other reasons given as well. The Or HaChaim, he lists three reasons as to why meat was permitted after the flood. All the reasons kind of connect, but he says three reasons. One reason is because the reason the animals were saved from the flood was only the merit of Noach. The Torah says that the only righteous person in the whole world was Noach. He deserved to be saved with his family. And because of him, the animals were saved. So since the animal's existence can be attributed to Noach, Noach was permitted to have mastery of the animals and eat the food. That's one idea. He then says that on the ark itself, when they're on the Teva, how'd the animals survive? Well, Noach toiled long and hard hours to care for and feed the animals. The sages describe to us what Noach did on the Teva. Basically, he spent his entire time there constantly caring for and feeding animals, to the extent that he was late with the lion's food and he was bit by the lion. That's what Chazal tell us. He was bit by the lion. So since he put so much hard work into caring for those animals, he then was given permission to eat the animals afterwards. That's the and it's based on the verse in Tehillim, Yegia kapecha ki sochel. You know, the work of your hands, then you will eat. So because it was all based on his toil, he's able to eat. And the third reason given by the Or HaChaim is because after the flood, Noach brought a karban, an offering. And that's the point where Hashem swore, I'm never going to destroy the world again. So because it was based on Noach's offering that the world was now going to be sustained forever, there'll be no more destruction, so Noach was given mastery of the entire world because it was all around in his merit. So all three of those answers are very, very connected. But essentially we're saying that based on Noach's efforts and Noach's merit and Noach's righteousness, at that point he was given the permission to consume animals and have mastery over the world. So that's why it changed the times of the flood. So that before the flood, animals are off limits. Once the flood comes along, we're allowed to eat animals.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
The animals were saved because of Noah. Is that because the shechit called basar?
Right, exactly. Right.
So they're included even, in that called
yes,
basar.
Yes, yeah, they were included in that called basar.
Okay.
Even the animals were blamed for doing things inappropriate. And also, if the world had no human beings, there'd be no purpose for the animals either. So once you have to find a human being that's worth saving for the world to actually survive, or else there's no reason for a world. So after this, even so, even with these explanations, now we do know that animals do have a higher status in nature. animals certainly have a higher status than vegetation. Animals do have this nefesh we discussed before, but we're given permission to eat them. So the Ramban continues and explains, that's why we can't eat the blood, because we say, Adam hua nefesh. You know, where do you find the life force in the animal? It's in the blood. So we look at the blood as a higher element of the animal. That's off limits for us. Jews can't eat blood. Number two, that's why we can't eat Eiver Min HaChai. You're not allowed to eat a limb off a live animal. Because when the animal is alive, and it's vibrant, and it's dynamic, it's doing its thing as an animal, you can't eat from there because that's off limits to you. That's showing a higher element of the animal. So when you do a shechita and you eat the animal in a kosher way, you're trying to kind of peel away all the higher elements and just focus on the most basic and lowly elements of the animal. That's what you're trying to do. So initially we would have said we don't eat any animal, but now they're allowed to eat animals, we try to take away the higher parts and just focus on the lowest parts, the more animalistic parts of the animal. That's how we view it. And the Ramban says, so this is really, many commentators explain, this is the concept of shechita. When you slaughter an animal, what you're trying to do is, number one, slaughtering in that place drains it of its blood in a very effective way. If you ever witness a shechita, a lot of blood comes shooting out. It's not pleasant to watch, but you know, it does take out a lot of the blood. And number two, because we respect the animal, we have a concept in the Torah of tzar balei chayim, not to cause undue pain to animals. And it's interesting, the Torah push to animals is very interesting, because you're allowed to use animals for your own benefit. You can eat them, you can ride them, you can utilize them. But you shouldn't cause any undue pain for no reason. Just to cause pain to the animal, which is not necessary, is forbidden. So when it comes to shechita, you're allowed to kill and eat the animal. That's fine. We're supposed to do it in the most humane way. So shechita, we understand to be a quick, instant death for the animal. Once you cut through that area, the animal is at that point unconscious, can't feel anymore. And therefore, that's the concept of shechita. So shechita is really a way that we respect the animal. It's interesting. It kind of flips it around. A lot of animal rights groups look at shechita and they say we should ban shechita. It's terrible. But really, the way that the Torah of Shechita, this is the way we're trying to respect the animal. That's why we're trying to avoid eating the blood. We're trying to kill it in an instant way. And we're trying, because we respect the animal's higher status, not because we're trying to mistreat the animal. Right?
So they don't understand.
They don't understand, obviously, right. They should come to the class. We should invite them, right? So many commentators ask, why is there a blessing you made on Shechita? You make a bracha for Shechita. Shechita is a mitzvah. And essentially, you could say, well, why is it a mitzvah? It's a preparatory step. Like, for instance, you know, we're not allowed to eat bugs in our vegetables. So when I sit there and I wash off lettuce, there's a bracha I make when I'm washing my lettuce off. I'm just preparing the lettuce for consumption. I'm making it kosher to eat. But I don't make a bracha for it. But when it comes to shechita, there's a bracha made. So commentators struggle, like, what mitzvah, is the shechita itself a mitzvah or some other mitzvah that we're doing? So one interesting approach from the Chassam Sofer, he actually writes a very interesting thing. He says that the bracha we make on shechita, the bracha is actually alluding to the mitzvah of having compassion for animals. That's what he says. So we say Hashem commanded us to do shechita, it's because we are commanded to be merciful, compassionate people. We're commanded to take into account the pain and the feelings of animals. And therefore the bracha on shechita itself, the mitzvah we're actually performing at that point, I mean, the shechita allows us to eat it, but the mitzvah we're doing is we're actually showing compassion. So it really flips around the entire subject in a different way than a lot of people look at it.
Do you know the bracha you do before shechita?
Al hashechita is the bracha.
That's it?
Yeah.
Does he do it each time?
Ashir k'nei mitzvah al shechita.
He kills an animal, he does it?
So he'll do it
on the beginning of the day?
Yeah, in the session. The session, right. So if he's going to slaughter 15 animals, then he'll make a bun bracha once and he'll slaughter all 15. He goes until lunch comes back, he'll make another bracha afterwards. You know, but it's for the session of shechting.
You get up to 100 real quick.
Yeah, right. And now that the Torah permits shechita and allows us to eat the meat, it's interesting. It makes us focus on the idea that killing an animal is not taken lightly. That's the whole point of shechita. That we don't just kill the animal and consume it. We have to do it in a very, very precise way, based on the halachas, in a way which is going to drain out and strip it of all of its higher elements. And then that shows us that we don't take killing animals lightly. In fact, we're taught that when the Jews were in the desert, they weren't allowed to eat regular, everyday meat. They can only eat karbanos. If you wanted to sit down and have a Shabbos cholent, you had to use meat from a karbon. You couldn't use regular, everyday meat. Why? Because we're trying to show, it's like the Torah actually calls it, when you eat regular meat nowadays, the Torah's expression is basar taiva. It's the meat of desire. Because we're not talking about sanctified, holy meat from a karbon. We're talking about this meat that we want to eat, that we enjoy. So we call it basar taiva. It's the meat of desire. That's nowadays. But the initial way we ate meat in the desert was only through a karbon. You're only allowed, when we were in the desert, it was 40 years, you're only allowed, the only meat the Jews were allowed to eat was meat coming from a karbon, from a sacrifice.
Did they sacrifice in the desert?
Yeah, in the Mishkan, sure. They could bring...
So they had only man.
No. Well, they could bring... I mean, I don't know where they found the animals all the time, but they were allowed... They did have animals. They brought karbanos in the Mishkan all the time. So our license to eat meat was generated that we were trying to eat the meat in the most sacred way. So when you're in the desert, wandering around, the only meat they ate was the most sacred of all meats, the karbanos, the offerings. And that means that when we eat our meat, it's because we're trying to display that we respect the animal status, but we as human beings are on a higher status, but we're going to eat it in a higher way. So, like, essentially, if we were just going to eat the meat in an animalistic way, so then where are we any better than the animal? If we eat the meat in this more sacred way, if we're eating a meat of a karban, we're eating the meat and we're recognizing this comes from Hashem and we're human beings and we're eating it in the appropriate way, you know, with a bracha, kosher meat, you know, for Shabbos, to celebrate, in the right, in the proper format, so then we're actually exercising our human elements over the animal.
So why did they complain they didn't have meat in the
desert? Yeah, this was
and Hashem sent the slop.
Yeah, this is what I thought. I never knew that they had coconut.
That's a good question. I mean, I just don't know how many animals they had available, maybe. I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure. You know.
Well, they could have a deal.
Right. Right.
I thought they have no meat, and they complain, and they get punished. This is what I thought.
Well, I never said they ate a lot of meat. I don't know how much meat they had, but whatever meat it was, the only meat they're allowed to eat. Right, you know, once in a while they walked by a country that had some livestock, and they bought some, I don't know, I'm not sure. Practically, I'm not sure how much meat they had, but any meat, they weren't allowed to eat meat other than meat of karbanos. When we eat meat, so we should think back to that time in the desert where all meat was only sacred meat. And we're trying to show that we are humans. Human authority, human virtues are what allow us to eat meat. And without that, we're not supposed to be eating meat. And when the Torah says it, the Torah says you can only eat meat because it says, go back to the original verse we quoted, but the way the Torah describes it, there it is ki yirchak mincha hamakom, when you're distant from the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, it's like a concession to us. So there's a concession. Really, Hashem would like us to only eat sacrificial meat. Because that's the way a person's able to show that we are higher level, we're holy people, we're above animals, and therefore we can consume their flesh. Because you're not always near the Beis HaMikdash, it's far away from you, so Hashem makes a concession, and I'll let you eat meat anyways. Right, yeah, you can eat your own bisharach, you can eat your own gates. But yirchak mincha makom, it's when you're far away from the place. Because the idea is that it's a concept that when we eat the meat, we're supposed to be thinking, well, this meat we wish was a meat of a sacrifice. And we're going to try to use the holiest parts of ourselves to appreciate what this meat stands for. Without that, conceptually, we don't really have it. I mean, you're allowed to, but conceptually, there's no right to eat the meat because if we're being animalistic with our meat, then why are we any better than the animal that we're eating? No, it's not an idea of like the lion consuming the deer. We're trying to show that we can only allow to eat our meat because we're human beings. That's why we're allowed to eat the meat. The Gemara actually has a phrase, and again, it's not a halachic phrase, it's a conceptual phrase. But the Gemara says that somebody who's ignorant and not observant of mitzvos shouldn't eat meat. So conceptually, they explain, what does that mean? It means that because if you're somebody who acts on an animalistic level, then why are you any better than the meat you're eating? That's the concept. You have to be acting like a human being, and then you're allowed to eat the meat, because then you're showing I'm better than that meat. You know, there's a human being, and there's an element of meat over here which I'm allowed to consume. One commentary, the Ralbag, actually says, the very fact that shechita is a mitzvah, that actually strips the entire procedure of killing the animal from a killing, like a murder, we'll call it, to a holy procedure. Meaning that what? We have to show that our intent is not killing. When we kill an animal, we're doing a mitzvah, actually. So our mind is at that point, when you're a shochet, your mind should be not on death, but on God. That's what shochet should be thinking about. And the truth is, a shochet who is not Torah observant is not qualified to be a shochet. The meat that he can't do a kosher shechita. It has to be somebody who fears God and is qualified. And the idea is because we don't want to become cruel people who take death lightly. So part of what shechita offers us, it trains us. I'm letting you eat meat. And you're allowed to kill an animal, but as you kill it, you're not killing it because you revel in death and you enjoy killing God's creatures and you're going to become a cruel person who takes death lightly. It's the other way around. When it's shechita, so you start, you make your bracha. And you're careful of the halachas, and you're checking your knife. And the shochet essentially is viewing it as a service of God, and as a mitzvah rather than a killing. And that prevents him from becoming too cruel and and taking death too lightly. Yeah.
If there is a mistake, your hand shakes or something, and you couldn't do it correctly, I guess there must be prayers of forgiveness you ask Hashem?
Well, you didn't do anything. At that point, you didn't do anything wrong. You can sell that meat to a non-Jew to eat. No, that's not a problem, you know. just your boss will be upset with you. the boss of the kosher slaughterhouse is going to be upset that the meat's not kosher. But it happens to be, you go back 100 years ago when Jews were in a shtetl and there was no non-Jews around, if somebody performed a shechita that was disqualified, it was a major loss because they couldn't preserve the meat so easily. There's no one else to sell it to. And it could be this is the one cow they've had slaughtered in the past 4 months, and it would be considered a tremendous monetary loss. Nowadays, most slaughterhouses can very easily take the non-kosher animals and sell them off to non-Jews. It's not an issue. I once visited a slaughterhouse in Baltimore, and there's actually two sides of the slaughterhouse. There was the kosher side and the non-kosher side. So once they had a non-kosher shechita, you just put it on the other side. That was it. So it's not a big risk anymore. If the animal is not slaughtered properly, if you just send it off to the non-kosher line, it's not a major issue.
Animal that we can't eat the sirloin.
Right, yeah.
The
right, so those we sell off also.
Sold
yeah.
Non-kosher establishments.
Right, yeah, right, right. So that we also do. Different parts of the animal we can't eat, we also sell off to non-Jewish establishments, non-kosher establishments. And Rav Shemshon Fall Hirsch actually has one more, a deeper approach to shechita. Now, this whole concept that shechita and eating meat is when we impose our human elements upon the animal. So he says that all the different halachas of shechita, the way that it's done, and that which disqualifies shechita, those are all ways to show this is a human action, bringing it into the mastery of human beings, into human dominion. How does he explain this? He says the manner of death, if you do it according to the halacha, can only be done by a clear human action. Meaning the cutting that we do is a clean, clear cut. When animals kill their prey, they tear it, they rip it, they bite into it. There's no such thing as the animal making a clear, clean cut. Doesn't exist. All the different halakhas that we have are trying to show that we don't want any animalistic impulses involved in this eating. So when a lion goes and wants to eat a deer, it'll pounce on it, it'll rip it apart, and that's how it kills the animal. For us, we know we are what we eat. Now that's a concept which it's physically true. In Jewish thought, it's certainly true. And when you prepare animals to eat, to have meat, so you're trying to bring into yourself the purest parts of the animal. So what you want to do is tear the animal out of it and just bring in the parts which are ready for human consumption. So he says that you prepare the meat for consumption by imposing your human action upon the animal. Because you want to basically take it out of the animal kingdom and bring it to the human kingdom. That's what you want to do. So the only way you're allowed to kill it to eat it is that you kill it in a way, the knife is going to have a clear cut. It's not done by pressure. It's done through slicing. There's no nicks. It's not going to tear anything. It's not going to get... In any way, it's not going to get caught up in the animal. It's going to go straight through in a clean, clear cut. That shows that you're taking a swing, which is clearly a human action, and you're imposing it upon the animal. Because you're trying to, we'll call it, de-animal it. Because it has to be now ready for human consumption. So the highest elements of the animal we take away, and we don't touch those, we respect those. That's the blood, the life force. Anything which would keep the animal animalistic, if we were to just knock it or shoot it or tear it apart, that keeps it animalistic. We can't eat that part. We have to then impose our human action upon the animal, which makes it ready for human consumption. You're taking the animal out of the animal at that point. You're making it subservient to the human being, and at that point you can eat it. The way that Rav Hirsch describes it, he says that until this point, when the animal was alive, it was subservient to its animal soul. But now that you've done a shechita, it becomes subservient to the human. And once it's subservient to you, it's doing its job. That's how Rav Hirsch describes it. So shechita is really making it fit for the human being. It's taking away the parts that are respected and too holy for us to eat. It's making the animal ready to be consumed in a human way. From in a holy way, in a human way, when we impose our human mind and our human sanctity upon it. That's how Rav Hirsch is describing, and that's really the gist of shechita based on all these approaches that we've had. Now there's a few ideas about shechita kabbalistically which are fascinating I wanted to share as well. Someone recently showed me a piece, it's a Kabbalistic work called Shari Ora, The Gates of Light. I don't know who the author is even. But someone showed me a piece that he writes, and he discusses shechita. And he says that, how is it that we're allowed to kill an animal and eat it? It says, Rachma l'kamasav. It says Hashem's mercy is upon all his creations. So, even everything that we've just said, you're still killing an animal. And bottom line is that, how is that considered mercy of Hashem? If Hashem is compassionate, Hashem should prevent any sort of death. That's the question he asks. So he says, no, we got it all wrong. That whole verse, when it says, Rachamav al-kol ma'asav, it's an ashrei, it begins, Tov Hashem l'kol, Hashem is good for all, Rachamav, and His mercy is in all His creations. So he says that even shechita is really doing a favor for the animal. Now we're really going to tell Pita where they're wrong, right? You're helping the animal out. So what are you doing? He says because an animal does not have a neshama. Animal, he said, has a life force from God, but they don't have a neshama which helps them recognize and connect to God. Animal can't do that. An animal has no way to see God in life, to see God's wonders. Animal can't serve God. Animal, even though they have this life force from God, bottom line is that they remain an animal and they can't really accomplish much as animals. You know, they live and they die and that's it. When a human being now slaughters an animal and consumes it, we are what we eat. And the animal becomes a part of the human being. That's what happens. And now that we have the animal within us, the animal is privy to the accomplishments of the human being. So now the animal, which used to be just a cow grazing in the fields, suddenly is able to be consumed, and it can keep Shabbos, and it can go daven, and it can learn Torah, all these things. It can do chesed, because it's part of us. Because it becomes part of our system. That's what he says. And he compares it. Like when a person dies, after 120 years, and a person dies, you know, they ascend to the world of angels. And they live a more spiritual existence. So when an animal is killed and consumed, the animal lives a more spiritual existence. The animal goes from being animal to being human to some way. So what you're doing is that you're taking something, an animal, which has no way to accomplish in the eternal stage, and to serve God anyway, and you allow the animal to serve God. So killing the animal and eating it is doing a favor for the animal. That's what he says. Yeah.
I think that's what it's called.
Pirkei Shira.
Pirkei Shira. Yeah. Right? The animals sing their own, each animal, bird sings their own song to Hashem.
Right.
If you say that they don't have a soul.
That's a good question. So I think there's two different approaches to Pirkei Shira. One approach is that, you know, animals themselves, they don't serve God, but animals have angels that are appointed to oversee that type of animal. And one approach is that the angel of that animal sings those songs. That's one approach. The approach I like more that I usually think about is that the song the animal sings is really what the human being is supposed to express when they see the animal. Like, for instance, you know, the song of the elephant is, you know, Ma Gadlu Masecha Hashem. How large are your creatures, Hashem, right? So when we see an elephant, what's our reaction? So our reaction is, wow, that's so big, right? So we should say, wow, Hashem's creatures are so big, and that's the song of the elephant. Right? That's the way I like to understand it. Yeah. But it's all what the human being is going to express about seeing the animal. That's where it comes from. There's one other Kabbalistic idea which I wanted to share. It's a fascinating story which I read. Again, this is an even more Kabbalistic idea. The first one is more practical. You know, that we understand the animal becomes part of us when we eat it, and therefore it's privy to what we do. There's a deeper Kabbalistic idea, which is quoted in a book called the Ben Yehoyada. Ben Yehoyada was written by Rabbi Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, known as the Ben Ish Chai. He was, you know, a great Sephardic authority. He was somebody who was an expert in all areas of the Torah. He wrote many, many works. He didn't live too long ago. He lived, I think, in the late 1800s, something like that. He lived in Baghdad, in Iraq. And he's looked at, in the Sephardic world especially, he's looked at as one of their greatest authorities to this very day in Halacha and in many other areas as well. So he has a book he wrote, a commentary in the Gemara called Ben Yehoyada. And he actually cites there a story which occurred in Baghdad before his time. But it's a Kabbalistic idea about Shechita, which I wanted to share. Where his starting point in the Gemara is another fascinating story about animals. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was the one who compiled the Mishnah, one of the greatest sages to ever live. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi suffered terribly for 13 years of illness. He had stomach illness, he had like a toothache, all sorts of things for 13 years. And the Gemara says, why did he suffer? So the Gemara says, because one time, there were sheep going to the slaughter. And one of the sheep ran out of line, and it, you know, it nuzzled itself up against Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's coat. And he told it, go back into line, this is your purpose in creation. And at that point, they said in heaven, if he doesn't have any compassion, then we have no compassion on him. And he got punished for 13 years for that, on his level. But, you know, God punishes the righteous on a very, very strict level, and he suffered 13 years because of that. Now, he was right. We just said, it is the animal's purpose is to be slaughtered. He was right.
Yeah.
But he should have felt some level of compassion. And so why did he get healed from his suffering? Because this is 13 years later, he was at his home. His maid was sweeping. And she found a nest of weasels in the corner, baby weasels. And she was smacking it with her broom. And he told her, stop. No, God has compassion on all creatures. Leave him alone. And she stopped. So then in heaven they said, if he had compassion upon the animals, well, compassion upon him. So this is a story that really illustrates, in general, the Torah's approach to animals. Now, we do have compassion upon animals. That's an important thing to have. This is one of our greatest sages to ever live. He was punished severely for not having compassion upon animals. That's the story in the Gemara. And the basic understanding is just the idea that we should have mercy upon animals and treat them nicely and understand that they feel pain, they feel suffering as well. But Kabbalistically, the Ben Yoyada says there's a much deeper idea here, right? He quotes a story which he said occurred in Baghdad about 90 years before he was writing this down. So I guess it's the early 1800s or so, late 1700s. And he says that one time there was a butcher who went to buy animals outside the city, and he was trying to bring them back to the city to have slaughtered, and he would sell them. He had a butcher store. So he found a non-Jew, an Arab non-Jew, this is from Iraq, who was selling animals, and he had this very, very large sheep. And the Jew said, okay, I'll buy the sheep. He said, how much? He said, a very high price. He said, I can't afford it. And the salesman selling the sheep eventually gave him a very good price, and he ended up buying the sheep. So that was so he bought the sheep. It says, as he bought other animals that day as well, but this sheep was unique. It was a very, very large sheep. So it says that he was walking all the animals back, I guess, to his store, and he saw that this large sheep was particularly calm. It was very, very obedient, and usually the sheep are much harder to lead back to the store, but this one seemed to be going along very, very happily and did not have any sort of resistance to this Jew who bought it. So he said, okay, that's interesting. You know, it surprised him, but he said, fine. He decided, it's such a nice large sheep, I'll save it for Friday, I'll slaughter for Shabbos, and I'll sell it for Shabbos to all the Jews in the city. That's what he had said. So he's home that night, and it says he was sleeping on his bed, and he hears a knock at the door. And the shochet of the city was at the door, and he said, bring me that large sheep, I need to slaughter it tonight, because tomorrow there's going to be a big wedding in the city, and we want to use that sheep for the wedding. So the guy was in bed, and he was tired, and he didn't go to the door. He was talking through the window. So he didn't actually see the shochet at the door. But he told him, okay, I'm coming. So he said, I'll get up, and I'll do it. I guess it was worth his while to sell it, because this is a big sheep, wants to make the sale. So he got out of bed, he got dressed, and he started walking toward the house of the shochet. So he's on his way to the shochet's house, and the shochet has a dream. And the shochet's dream was that this elderly person came to him, and he said that the butcher's bringing you the sheep. It's a very, very large sheep they purchased today. And he said that inside this sheep is what we call a Gilgul Neshama. Gilgul Neshama means that we understand the idea of reincarnation. Sometimes Neshamas come back into the world to fulfill other purposes. So it could happen at times that a Neshama comes back in the form of an animal. Why that be, I don't know why that is, but sometimes it can come back in the form of an animal. So the butcher actually, the shochet, he never actually went to the house of this butcher. That was some sort of image the butcher had heard, or a dream he had, but it wasn't actually, the shochet was sleeping in his bed. So as simultaneously as the butcher was walking through the shochet's house, he had thought the shochet had come to his house to get the sheep, and the shochet was fast asleep in his bed having this dream. In this dream, they told him that there is an neshama of a person inside the sheep, and therefore what? It says, therefore, and this person, he told him the name, and the shochet knew who the person was. It was a very, very prominent person in the city from earlier, I guess, you know, a few years back, who had died. He was one of the leaders of the city. And this person's father was still alive, it says. And he says, his time has come for his rectification. You're going to perfect his neshama. And therefore, what you have to do is be very careful that you do the shechita properly. Check your knife doubly well. Make a bracha with a lot of kavana, a lot of intent, a lot of focus. Do a proper shechita. And don't just sell the meat out in the marketplace. Rather, you should cook the meat and invite to your house all the sages and righteous people of the city, those who fear God, and they should all make brachas upon eating the meat, beginning and end. Make sure they make a bracha beforehand, they bench afterwards. And in that way, this neshama will reach its full perfection in this world. That was the dream he had. So lo and behold, he gets out of bed, and the butcher is at the door with the sheep, and the shochet is ready to come out and slaughter it. So this is what happened is that, lost my place here. So after he saw the dream, he heard the butcher at the door, and he says, I brought you the sheep that you commanded me to bring to you. He says, what do you mean? I was sleeping in bed, I didn't tell you to bring it, but they figured out what happened based on the dream. And he said that, now I have this dream, he told him what happened. So they followed as they were told, and they went ahead and they slaughtered it, and they invited all the righteous of the city to eat it, and that's what they did. That's the story. So they're saying there's another element in Shechita. I'm not saying this is the usual what happens when you shechit an animal, but we understand that sometimes a person can be involved in Shechita, and it has a lot further ramifications than you can ever imagine. that's what I'm trying to point out. Again, I think this story is unique, and I don't think this is a common event that somebody's soul is, you know, reincarnated into the sheep. But I thought it was a fascinating story nonetheless, and it just shows that Shechita goes far beyond that which we think. It's not just killing animals so we can have a hamburger, but Shechita is a holy process which actually is a favor for the animal. In some rare events, maybe it's helping out some person's neshama that got trapped inside or something. And essentially, Shechita is a way we show compassion to the animal. It's not a way that, it's not because we think animals are lowly and terrible and despised that we eat them. Rather, it's the other way around. It's because we respect it. Therefore, we have to eat it only with this process, with a bracha, in a holy way. It actually allows the animal to go much further in its purpose because it now becomes part of the human being. So I think the lesson from all of this. Also, just to go back to the story in the Gemara. So he says that when this sheep ran over to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi from out of the line for Shechita, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, "Go back in line. This is your purpose." So what he says, again, this is a Kabbalistic idea. He says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi probably knew that this sheep as well had an Hashemah inside. That's what he says. And being that he was such a great person, it could be he could have saved it from being slaughtered and rather prayed on the Neshama's behalf instead. That's what he says, you know. So there are other ways Neshama could have reached its perfection rather than being slaughtered. So why make it suffer through slaughtering? Just pray on its behalf and help it that way. That's what it says here. But again, the simple meaning of the story is just the compassion and saying, get back in line. That's the problem, the simple meaning of the story. But the lesson certainly is, if one's allowed to eat meat, eating meat at times can help the animal. And people say, I'm a vegetarian. So the question, how's the Torah view being a vegetarian? So the answer would be, it's certainly allowed. A Jew is not obligated to eat meat. Besides, when we build the Beis HaMikdash, everyone has an obligation to eat the Korban Pesach, the Pesach sacrifice. So you're talking about a small piece of meat yearly. Besides that, there's no obligation to eat meat. Really, I would think the Torah view on being a vegetarian is what the reason why. I mean, if the reason of being a vegetarian is it's good for your health, then great. If you feel that makes you healthy, then that's not a problem. If you feel that animals are being mistreated, so if that's true, then that's also, you know, that's a valid reason to object to eating meat. Hopefully, kosher slaughterhouses treat them properly, but if that's your feeling, that's not a problem. That's okay. Animals should be treated properly. That's a Torah view. But if your concept is that I don't believe that eating animals is right, well, Torah certainly says one is allowed to eat animals. Eating animals is actually you exercising your virtues of a human being. You're showing that animal life certainly is secondary to human life. Animal life is subservient to human life. And that's the Torah's view. So someone's a vegetarian because they feel the animals and humans are on an equal plane. That goes against the Torah viewpoint of animals. Now, there's this phrase out there. People will say, you know, I don't eat other animals. You ever hear that? I don't eat other animals. They're equating themselves to an animal. We're animals too. So I don't eat people. I don't eat other animals either, you know? So that phrase is not a Torah perspective. You know, because that phrase is equating animals to the human being. That we never do from the Torah's perspective. People will say Shechita is cruel. Well, that's also not... The Torah views Shechita as compassionate, not cruel. If you say Shechita is cruel, that's not a Torah perspective either. So being a vegetarian is fine according to the Torah, but the Torah's view would be, well, what's your reason for being a vegetarian? If it's because you feel Shechita is cruel, well, obviously that's not a Torah perspective. The Torah says Shechita is compassionate. If you just feel you have other reasons why you don't like meat, then that's totally acceptable. But what we see from all this discussion is we don't take killing lightly. We don't take eating meat lightly. Eating meat has to go through a rigorous process to be made kosher, and that's because we respect the animal. We don't want to cause pain to the animal. We respect its higher elements. And we eat. We're eating it as human beings on a higher plane. It's not like the lion consuming the deer. That's not how we eat meat. We're eating meat that we're human beings, and therefore we impose upon the animal our human virtues and our human power. And with that, the meat's allowed to be eaten. So that's what I would say. So this is what, anyone wants to share this with PETA, you're welcome to. But that's what we would say.
Rabbi, at what point did animals eat other animals?
I think also after the Mabul. I think it's only at that point as well.
But certainly not in Gan Eden.
I don't think so, yeah. Right. I think even animals weren't allowed to eat other animals until after the flood. I think.
I did hear a number of years ago in Muncie, a fish was talking from a tank, and they thought that there was a neshama in it.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what happened.
I heard the story. I don't know. Was it a verified story? I don't know. But